originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I am joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I would like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 201, and also to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. So a portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. Please, if you are able to help, visit the website at www.pdjf.org. So our guest tonight has won 26 black type stakes during his 33-year career, including 3 graded stakes victories. He's earned leading rider titles at Turfway Park and Belterra. Last year, he just scored his 2,000th victory with a total number of 2,050 victories and counting and over $23 million in earnings. It's a pleasure to introduce jockey Dean Sarvis. Dean, welcome to the show.
Hi, Christina. How are you? Thank you.
Great having you here in studio. Dean, appreciate you taking the drive to come here to Lexington, and pleasure to have you here. You've been riding at Belterra Park.
Yes, that's where I'm currently riding.
And you've been riding, do you ride the entire Ohio circuit then during the year?
Mainly Kentucky and Belterra, the northern Kentucky. I do a lot of traveling. I'm located in, I work at in the mornings in Lexington, so I'm pretty much traveling to another city every day that I ride.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Put a lot of miles on the car.
So
you're pretty much stable, though, as far as where you live. You just drive a lot.
Yes. I live in Georgetown, so 20 minutes outside of Lexington, and I do a lot of traveling to Belterra, Turfway, Churchill, Ellis Park, Thistle, make some trips to Thistle. The people down here tend to ship some horses up there, the Ohio breds once in a while, just wherever they need me.
There you go. Have saddle, we'll travel.
Exactly.
But, and that's a, has to be long days for you. You're working horses in the morning and then obviously shipping in to ride. And then, you know, I don't know your weight, you know, you probably are hungry quite often. It's not an easy job.
The 4 days a week are long. My day gets started. I leave my house at 4:30 in the morning. I go to Lexington. I go to Keeneland and get on horses. And I go to the training center and get on horses. And every once in a while, even over to the farm over there on Russell Cave and get on horses once in a while. The name of it is, I can't think of the name. It's changed the name so many times. I don't know what it is right now. But so, you know, it's, I keep busy. I do a lot of traveling. And then from there, whenever I'm done in the mornings, then I, you know, proceed to Belterra, Turfway, Churchill, once in a while, Thistle. Once in a while, Presque Isle, up in Erie, Pennsylvania, Ellis Park. So I do a lot of traveling. Those 4 days, the days that you're racing, it's all day. It's a long day.
But you're not from here. So tell us where you were born and where you grew up.
I was born in Baltimore, Maryland. That's where my family is from. It's where they got their start in the business. My grandfather, John Tamaro, trained horses around there for a very long time. I have an uncle, John Tamaro, his son, who's still currently training and got his start there. Had an uncle named Mike Tamaro that passed away a while back that got his start in Maryland. It's where my family kind of made their bones in the business. And, you know, so I moved from Maryland to Florida. My family moved to Florida, and I lived there for 10 years before I left home to get started, you know, riding horses.
So you're in Florida as a kid then?
Yeah, from about the third grade until I left. I quit school when I was 16 and went to Ocala and was galloping horses on King Haven Farms for my grandfather. He was training for a Canadian outfit at the time called King Haven Farms. We spent our winters in Ocala, and I spent one summer at Fort Erie and one summer at Woodbine galloping horses.
So you quit school at 16. So you knew you wanted to be a jockey.
Yeah, I knew what I was going to do when I was 6 years old, to be honest with you. There was never any doubt in my mind what I was, you know, wanted to do.
So why, 6 years old, what happened? What kind of memorable moment maybe happened that made you decide that?
Not one thing, but I grew up on the racetrack, you know. Spent a lot of summers with different aunts and uncles at different places. You know, I remember going with my uncle John at Monmouth Park when I was a little kid and hanging out with my cousin at the barn all day, and spent summers in Canada with my aunt and uncle Mike and Kathy. It's just what we did. You know, it's what I did when I was a kid, and I couldn't, you know, I couldn't wait to get started, honestly.
It's in your blood.
Yeah.
So you're 16 years old, and you're galloping horses in Ocala. And how easy did it come for you? Did you find you had that natural athletic ability?
Yeah, I'll be honest, it came pretty easy. By the time I went to Fort Erie that first summer with my Uncle Mike, I could pretty much get on any horse in the barn. There wasn't maybe but one or two that he wouldn't put me on. And, you know, I just loved it. I mean, it just came natural to me. And, you know, when something comes that easy to you, it's great, you know. And I just couldn't wait to get started, you know. And those years with my aunt and uncle Mike at Woodbine and Fort Erie, they were really, really a fun time of my life, even before I started actually riding races. You know, it was really, really a good time.
Now, what did your parents think when you quit school, 16, and you go up to Ocala to start working horses on the farm? What did they think of that?
Well, it's my mother's side of the family that's in the business, and of course, she knew it was coming for a long time. I'm sure it was hard for her, even though she might not say that. I know it was tough because I was young. But she knew, you know, that's what I wanted to do, and that was going to be my path. So, you know, she supported me, and, you know, she's always stood by me, and it's nice. You know, I'm sure it was hard for her. Now that I have children that have, you know, grown and graduate, you know, I think about that a lot. I was like, wow, you know, that must have been tough to let your kid go at 16, and because I know how I am with my kids now, and that had to be tough for her.
Definitely. And was it hard for you leaving home at such a young age?
Yeah, I missed it, but at the same time, it was what I wanted to do, you know. So I was kind of like, the last couple of years that I was home, I was like, you know, when do we get started? You know, let's go. It was her family. I was with family, so I'm sure that helped her a little bit. You know, I wasn't going off with strangers, you know, it was family, so I think that helped a little bit. But again, I'm sure it was hard for her to, you know, you're still pretty young at 16. I know how, as a parent, how I looked at my kids when they were 16. And, you know, so, but, you know, she knew what I was going to do. So it wasn't like it was a surprise that I was leaving to get started when it happened.
Now, prior to that, when you were growing up, were you always pretty athletic and involved in sports?
Yeah, I loved sports. I was always outside. I came home from school, I threw my books down, and I was gone. You know, I was playing baseball or football. The football career ended pretty quick. At a young age, I found out, yeah, this is not going to be what I'm going to do. But I loved football more than baseball. And then I went on from football to baseball and played baseball for a while. I was always outside doing something, playing some kind of sports.
So maybe, again, part of the reason why you're so good on a horse pretty quickly, you're already athletic. Now, when you went to Ocala, started working for your grandfather, did he have you do any work in the barn, or you were strictly riding the horses?
Oh, no. I've done everything you can do. Those guys, I mean, they teach you, right? You know, if you're going to ride a horse, you got to first, learn how to take care of a horse. And I did everything you could before he even let me near a horse. I'd get up in the morning and go into the barn, and we'd take care of the horses. And actually, the riding wouldn't start till a little bit later in the morning. So I was doing a lot of different things as far as barn work and taking care of the horses. And then we kind of ride midday. And then when that was done, then I proceeded to, doing paddock work, working on paddocks and just general things around the farm. Any kind of work that really needed to be done whatsoever. I took care of the racetrack. He taught me how to take care of a racetrack. That was my job every day. It's funny because when I think back about it, everything that he taught me, I use now as a rider. Even things, like racetrack, how to take care of racetracks and what's going on with the racetrack. And, I'm so thankful that I came up under people that taught me right from the beginning, instead of just throwing me on the back of a horse and say, go ahead and go.
That's amazing. And, did he pay you, or was it,
it was some pay. He paid me, it wasn't much, but when you're that age, anything's a lot, and I was living on the farm. So, whatever my paycheck was, I had to, I got to do with whatever it was left over. I got to do whatever I wanted with it. I didn't have any responsibilities as far as bills. So, it wasn't paying me much, but again, I was glad to get it,
Now, were you working with babies at the time at the farm, or older horses?
It started out being babies. I did a lot of paddock work, getting on horses in the paddocks. A whole lot of that before we kind of went out to the racetrack. Just like you do with babies on any farm, you start them out in the paddocks and shed rows. They had shed rows in the barns that we would jog them around, and just the normal process that you would do with breaking a baby, and then on to the racetrack. But it was pretty much babies that first spring that I spent there in Ocala.
Do you think that's good for a young rider to be first introduced to the young horses? Is that a good combination?
Absolutely. The first thing I learned is, how to fall off. It's the first thing you learn. And then how to get back up and do it again. Because you're going to fall off, and you need to know. And I think you find out real quick. Because, matter of fact, the first year I was there in Ocala, I had a horse buck with me into a wall, and he turned over on me and he broke my pelvis in three places, and it knocked me unconscious. And when I came to, I didn't have any feeling in my legs. I couldn't stand up, and a couple guys picked me up and they kind of drug me down the shed row with my legs kind of dangling behind me. And and by the time the ambulance got there, I could feel one of my legs, and then by the time I got to the hospital, the feeling came back in the other one. And, the only thing, I'm laying in the hospital bed, and I remember that, I'm just waiting for the doctor. All I wanted to know is, when can I get back on a horse? it's there, it's not, and that's all I wanted to know. Is just, I'm laying in the hospital going, I'm not interested in what's wrong. I don't care, whatever. I can feel my legs now. We're all good. When can I get back on a horse? And then comes in and tells you, and 6 weeks sounds like forever, at that point, it really does. And that was it. I mean, it is what it is.
It's bringing back memories, Dean, of me waking up in the hospital. That was the first question I asked every single time.
Exactly.
And so for you, at a very young age, you realized the dangers of the business. And obviously, there was never any hesitation whatsoever.
Never. Not for me. I had my share of spills, and even young, when you get thrown or you come off a horse, and again, it hurt my feelings. It didn't hurt me. No matter how it hurt me, if I came off, it hurt my feelings. That's what hurt me the worst, So I just wanted to get back on, and there was never any doubt, no matter what happened, what I was doing with my life. I thank God that I've been able to spend my life around thoroughbred racehorses. I really do. And I think about other people, my own kids, who never got interested in them at all. How they feel when they get to an age where they're graduating and they're not sure what they do with their lives. And it's such a, I think about it now, I was just so lucky to have that, you know, just, I love this. I knew what I loved. I knew I loved the horses before I was, you know, even close enough to be thinking about a career with them. I'm just very fortunate. I feel very fortunate for that.
Jockey Dean Sarve is joining us tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Dean, you mentioned going up to Canada, Fort Erie and up north there. So tell us, how was that transition? Was that kind of a big deal for you, traveling so far away from home?
Sure, it was a big deal, you know, because it's a long ways away. You know, you leave, you know, home and you go to Ocala. Well, from down in Miramar, I grew up there, right there in a corner by Calder. It was real close, literally about a mile from Calder. And, you know, it's not that far. But then once you travel like that, I remember I rode the, when I went to Fort Erie, I rode the horse van up from Ocala. And I remember we stopped in here in Lexington. As a matter of fact, I think we went to Keeneland and picked some horses up, if I remember right. And then proceeded on up, felt like forever. The van ride felt like forever in the back there. But, it was probably, I really enjoyed the time that I had there with my uncle Mike, who was training the second string for King Haven at the time under my grandfather. And, my aunt Kathy was at Woodbine, my grandfather's assistant trainer. And I didn't get up to Woodbine much that first year. I pretty much stayed at Fort Erie and worked. And but it was a great experience because it was like, you know, you're in a different country. You're away from home, and I just loved it. You know, it's one of the things I love most when I was young about the business is seeing the different places and getting to travel to the different places and how different, you know, different places are. You know, it's a really good part of the business. I think when you're young, you enjoy that. Not so much when you get older and you have family, you want to settle down and be at home. But when you're young, it's great. It really is.
I agree with that, definitely. And during your time at Fort Erie that first year, obviously you have in your mind that you're focused on preparing to ride races. So did you start breezing a lot of horses? Did they kind of teach you? Any jockeys take you under their wing at that point?
I was breezing a ton of horses. I mean, they had a lot of horses. I mean, we had maybe 30 to 40 horses at Fort Erie, and I would get on a lot of horses. I'd get on 10 a day. I pretty much went from the track, time to track open to the time to track closed, and on breeze days when they were breezing horses, I was breezing a lot of horses. And I think that's really, it's essential to getting your clock down. It's very important for a young rider to do a lot of that kind of work, because to me, pace in your clock is extremely important, and it's just like anything else. It's just repetitive work. You know, you just do it over and over and over again till it's just, you're not even thinking about it. You're just doing what comes natural. And you know, being able to get on that many horses at that young of an age is, I'm sure, it was very important.
How do you develop a good clock in your head, other than the repetitiveness you mentioned? But what's it feel like to you? I mean, thinking back, that was probably what I struggled with the most when I first started out. So how, for you, did you master that?
My grandfather was very old school. He didn't train horses to be on the front end. He liked closers, and closing is all about pace and speed and timing when the move. His works were all very long and slow works. We even went through a stage where he was doing interval training, which is, there were times where I would breeze a horse, you know, 5/8 of a mile, and let him walk till he caught his breath, breeze him a half a mile, let him walk till he caught his breath, and then breeze him 3/8 of a mile. Literally three times in a period of maybe, you know, I had that half an hour. Again, with workouts like that, time is crucial, absolutely crucial. If you go too fast, it messes it up. You can't even finish doing what you're doing. But he was probably the most influential. He taught me pace. I mean, I can't even really explain how, but he taught me pace. He was all about the speed, the pace, closing horses, always finish with horse under you. He always wanted his horses finishing good. He'd rather a horse finish good and not get there as opposed to, you know, be stopping. The work I did with him those couple years in Florida before I went to Maryland to ride with my bug with my uncle was absolutely, you know, crucial to what kind of rider I became and the kind, you know, every rider has a different style, I guess. My favorite horse to ride is a horse that's a closing horse. It's just the way it worked out, but that's what I like. It's what I feel like I'm good at. The timing and measuring that wire right at the right time is very important with any closer, no matter where he's coming from, just off the pace or a deep closer. It's all about the move and the pace, and that all comes from those very, very early years.
I always love that rush you get when you're flying down the lane, passing everyone.
Yeah. exactly.
It's an incredible feeling, definitely. So now let's talk about the moment you decided, I'm sure with your family, that you were ready to start riding, and you said you started in Maryland.
I went to Maryland to ride for my Uncle John. There was a bug rider there that got real hot, and he had about 5 calls on the overnight every day, every race, is Kent DeSormo. And my uncle was going into Maryland, and I think just because people were looking, you know, literally the first year I was there, when we first got there, he would be named on 5 horses a race. And there was, all of a sudden, there was a whole bunch of bug riders there, you know, looking up to, you know, ride his second call and third call and fourth call and fifth call sometimes. But I went there to ride, and I did good there. I won races. Obviously, Kent was on fire. But I liked riding in Maryland just because it was kind of where my family got their start in the business. And I'd heard a lot of stories from there when I was a kid. And, my grandfather and Bud Delp and King Leatherberry and Dutro, they were like, them guys pretty much dominated racing in Maryland for about 20 years. And that was the stories. And when I was a kid, that's who I heard about all the time. And listening to my aunt and uncles talk. And so it was kind of fun just to go back to where they got their start. And I had spent some summers at Monmouth Park as a little kid with my Uncle John. And, you know, I was kind of excited to get to ride for him. And, you know, we spent 2 years in Maryland. I spent 2 years in Maryland. Before I went to New Jersey, when he decided to go to New Jersey and go to Monmouth and stay in Monmouth or ride and take all of his horses to Monmouth. That was the first year I went to Monmouth, but I spent 2 years in Maryland there, and I enjoyed it. It was good timing. It was bad because, you know, when you got a guy like Kent riding there, it's hard to get any recognition, you know, because the spotlight, you know, he was a very gifted rider for a young rider at a very early age. He was, you know, that's why he won that many races that early. But, you know, I'm glad I was there. And like I said, I enjoyed riding for my uncle and, you know, and enjoyed riding for him later on for years at Monmouth. I loved Monmouth Park. It was one of my favorite racetracks to ride at. You know, there was no other place like it. That's, you know, it's different places give you a different feel and different tracks. And Maryland is kind of old school racing, you know, Laurel's a very old place and it's got its feel. And then you go to, Pimlico, a lot of history at Pimlico. So it's always fun to be there at Pimlico and ride the meet when it's the, Preakness and take all that in and that many people there. And, you know, riding it Pimlico during the Preakness and having the people in the infield and outside. It's such a rush. The same thing at Churchill when they do that at Derby. It's a unique experience. I loved riding there. And then when I decided to go on to Monmouth with my uncle that first year, when I got to Monmouth, that's a very unique track too. There on the Jersey Shore, it's a great place to live, and you got the ocean there. And Monmouth is a beautiful racetrack, and you know you had a Olympic-sized swimming pool at the jocks part, you know, at the jocks room, and it just things like that that you take in things like that's unique to the racetrack, and that's what I loved about being different places and getting all those different feels for things. And I kind of went there when Julie Crone was dominating the Jersey circuit, is when I rode in Monmouth. She was pretty much in control of things around there at the time.
I'm jealous you experienced the pool at Monmouth Park. They filled it in when I rode there.
You know, I have not been back since they filled it in, but I was very sad to hear when somebody told me that was no longer there, because it was great. You know, everybody would, all the jockeys and trainers would go and have breakfast during break time at the jocks room kitchen. It was great food there, and everybody would sit outside at the pool and eat their breakfast and then go back to work. And then again, after when the morning work was done, everybody'd go over to the jocks room and swim and have a good time. And then after the races, the same thing. And it was really a great place to be.
You're out east during a, as you mentioned, tough time period as far as the quality of riders there. My gosh, you mentioned Kent DeSormo with the bug in Maryland, and then Julie Crone at Monmouth. So name some other riders that were riding there at the time.
In Maryland, Donnie Miller, Great Hutton, Jimbo Bacalli, very good rider, very good rider, all talented riders. Learned a lot from Jimbo. He rode for my grandfather quite a bit when he was younger. So he always, you know, I tried to listen to him as much as possible. And he was very good on a closing horse, which was what I was trying to do well. And then when I went to Jersey, a lot of guys, Julie Crone and Julie Crone and Tiki Marquez and Cece Lopez, and they were the guys that were kind of guys that were winning a lot of races, and a lot of good riders. There's a lot of riders that shipped back and forth out of New York. I got to ride some races with Angel Cordero, which was pretty much my idol growing up. I won a stake, the Tyro Stakes, which is a two-year-old stakes at Monmouth one year, and he had come in to ride a horse that had broken their maiden by like 20 lengths in New York, and I would have to say that was probably my favorite win of all times, just because, you know, getting to ride with Angel Cordero, first of all, was just like, it's just like, man, I can't believe I'm riding a race with this guy. This is the guy, you know. And and then that horse winning, it was, you know, it's right up there with my favorite wins, just because of having him in the race.
And you beat Angel Cordero.
Yeah, Angel was, Julie was second and Angel was third. So it was pretty big for me. It was a big win.
We'll continue our visit with jockey Dean Sarvis after this short commercial break. Folks, stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm John Velasquez.
And I'm Julian Lepau. Every jockey knows and accepts the risk of a sport every time they get a leg up on the horse.
Although catastrophic on-track accidents are rare, when they do happen, the lives of the jockeys and their family change forever.
It's up to all of us in racing to support these men and women.
That's why we support the Permanent Disabled Jockey Fund. Since its founding in 2006, the PTJF has disbursed over $8 million to over 75 permanently disabled jockeys.
Over 90 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly to these brave men and women.
They use their monthly stipend to pay bills, hire caretakers, and many other things that make living with a permanent disability just a bit easier.
This is Mike Penna of HRRN. Did you know that the PDJF has no permanent guaranteed funding mechanism and relies entirely on donations from people like you? Please visit the PDJF website at pdjf.org to learn how you can help.
Hi, I'm Ron Turcotte. I support the PDJF. I hope you will too, and I thank you.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Dean Sarvis. So, Dean, prior to the break, we were talking about some of the great riders you were riding with there on the East Coast in Maryland and New Jersey. And did you find it good for you as a rider to ride with such talented, riders?
Absolutely. In my opinion, you know, the better your competition is, the better it makes you. There was a lot of talented riders on the East Coast when I first started. They were doing a lot of travel. You do a lot of traveling on the East Coast. Tracks are close, and you do a lot of traveling. So you get not just the guys that are there, maybe in your, you know, your room every day, but you get a lot of riders coming from other places, very talented riders coming out of New York. And Herb McCauley was around Jersey, still there a little bit when I first started. You know, those guys, in my opinion, they teach you to ride. You know, you get out there and you ride with those guys and you learn how to ride. You really do. And you know, if you're paying attention at all, you can't help but learn something. I think I've always loved riding with those guys because I think it brings out the best in you. The competition, I love competition. I'm very, very super ultra competitive. And, you know, I wanted to be the best I can be, and I want to ride with guys that are very good and, you know, and see how I do. You know, I mean, when you're a kid, that's what you want, you know, and you learn that way. And, you know, I was very fortunate to be in a place where there was a lot of very talented riders around.
And what did you learn from them, and maybe what did you struggle with early in those years that maybe they helped you out with?
I think I was a little too, had my mindset on getting horses back a little too much. Some of the speed horses, I think I learned later on riding with those guys about, you know, how to ride a speed horse well. You ride whatever kind of horse, whether it's a speed horse, you know, an off-the-pace horse or a deep closer, you know, there's an art to riding them. And those guys, riding those races with those guys kind of taught me how to ride a speed horse better, because it wasn't what was coming, it wasn't what I was trying to do early in my career. I was probably trying to drag horses back too much. They really taught me by watching those better riders ride. Okay, this is, you know, there's another way of doing this, and this is how you do it, you know, because there were some good ones. And, it takes practice like everything else, but it makes it a lot easier when you can watch another talented person who's doing something right. It makes it a lot easier to take in. If you're somewhere and maybe, you know, you're not fortunate enough to be around, you know, guys that are really good at what they're doing, well, it's hard to learn to be good at what you're doing if you can't see what somebody's doing the right way. Just like a horseman, when the guys that I was very fortunate to come up, my family taught me the right way to do things, and, you know, and you see it later on with everything. And it's the same thing with riding. You can see a guy out there doing something, and when you're young, and you should be paying attention all the time, and I was, to guys riding and how they were doing it, and seeing those guys do it a certain way, that helped me a lot.
Tell us what the atmosphere is like in the jocks room. Obviously, you're surrounded by your competitors, but also the folks you look up to. So what's that atmosphere like?
You know, it's very unique. Our business, you know, it's very competitive. You've got 30, 40 riders in a jocks room. You know, we're trying for, nowadays there's maybe 8 races on a card and 8 horses. You got 64 horses running, 64 to 70 horses running a day. And you've got 30 or 40 riders in there trying for those mounts. And it's very competitive. You know, but at the same time, we have each other's lives in our hands. We have to take care of each other. You know, we're trying to win, you know, as much as we can. But, you know, we're all in spots every day that someday that, you know, you're going to be in another day. And you take care of each other the best you can while trying to win the best you can. And it makes for a very unique, you know, atmosphere. It's very, you know, I say all the time, you know, you see sporting teams that go out, and can you imagine if, you know, the Yankees and the Red Sox went back into the same locker room after a ball game? It's not going to be pretty, you know. So, but for a jockey, you learn to, you know, control your emotions, be very competitive, do everything you can to win, but you also have to take care of that guy next to you, because you just do. It's the right thing to do. And it's, you know, so the atmosphere in the jocks room, it's very competitive, but it's also, we're here and we're going to take care of each other, you know, no matter what, that's what we're going to do.
You seem very cool, calm, and collected, but I know some jocks are not that way in their hotheads. So I'm sure you've seen your number of fights break out in the jocks room. With all that being said, have you seen too many ugly fights?
No, not really. I mean, you know, again, what jockeys do is very unique. I mean, you have to go into that jocks room after every race and spend all day long with a guy that you're literally, you know, fighting your brains out on the racetrack with, and then you got to turn it off and go back in there and sit literally right next to him and get dressed and undressed. And it teaches you to control yourself, you know, in ways that most athletes do not have to do. You know, they have their whatever out on the field, and then once they go back into jocks or back into their dugout or clubhouse or locker room or whatever you want to call it, it's over. In the jocks room, you know, you got to go back in there and be there the rest of the day right next to that guy. And so you learn to control yourself, and it's a unique, very unique situation for any athlete. I think if you asked any athlete what they would think that would be like to do that, you might, you know, the answers would be very surprising. I think a lot of guys would have a tough time with that. But as in anything else, you have to do it. So you learn to do it, and you learn to, you know, get along, basically.
You have to, right?
Yes.
Jockey Dean Jarvis joining us tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Dean, you've mentioned traveling constantly in the mornings and in the afternoons, and injuries and the competition. So what, in your opinion, is the hardest part about what you do?
The part I don't like the most is the injuries and the waiting to get back. That's the hardest part. You know, they're going to come. If you're going to ride, if you're going to make a lifetime career out of it, you're going to have your injuries. And the setbacks are tough, because, you know, your mounts disappear. Once you disappear, your mounts disappear, and you kind of start over. Now, as you've been around a while, you know, your loyal guys are your loyal guys, and they're going to come back to you. But every time you start back, you're kind of, you know, you're it's a tough deal. You know, you go away and you lose mounts, and you know, and you come back, and the guys that are going to stick with you, they give you a chance right away. But it takes time, and the time is the hardest part for me. The sitting at home on the couch for 6 to 8 to 10 weeks is tough. It's really, I'm a hyperactive guy, I guess. You know, I don't do a lot of sitting around, even on my spare time. I come home and I sleep. But once I get up, I'm doing something, you know. And That's the toughest thing about the business to me, is to the injuries and, you know, missing the time. And, you know, it's hard. It's the hard. That's the part I don't like. You know, everything else, there's tough things about it. There's great things about it. But the toughest part is, you know, the time you miss and having to start over.
You mentioned your injury to your pelvis as a young kid, but tell us the other injuries you've suffered throughout your career.
I've had a few. I've had broken ribs, broken scapula, collarbones, wrists, which are almost automatic. It seems to me collarbone and wrists are pretty much an automatic thing. I think it's just natural. When you fall, you stick your hand out to brace your fall, and you know, there goes the wrist or the collarbone, whatever one happens to hit first. And left arm and left tibia, and you know, I've had my share, but I feel lucky, even though I've had my share, because I've never had really life-threatening injuries or injuries that to my spine or neck, which are scary things and might keep you out a very long time. I think the longest I've been out is 2 months, so I'll take that anytime, really. You know, if you can get through a riding career and say, you know, you've never been out more than a couple months and never had any life-threatening injuries and, you know, bone heals, and it's just you go home and sit around for a while and you're back at it, you know, I'll take that.
So now let's talk about some highlights, some good memories for you. I'm sure, as I mentioned in the beginning, you've won 3 graded stakes victories, 2 on the same horse. However, Soho Sunday, you won the Grade 3 Betsy Ross Handicap in 1990 and also the Grade 3 Vinland Handicap. Tell us about that horse and how you acquired the mount.
She was my uncle's horse, and I was riding all his horses at the time in Jersey. A man named Joel Kligman owned her, who my grandfather trained 4 years ago before my uncle did, and he was a great guy, very much into the horse racing, had horses around Jersey for a long time. I was a big Bruce Springsteen fan, and a lot of his horses I rode were named after Bruce Springsteen songs and different places, and the Stone Pony, which is a bar he played out of when he was a young kid in Jersey Shore, and was one of my favorite horses, Stone Pony, and Tramps Like Us was one of my favorite ones besides Soho Sunday that I rode for him. And she was a very nice filly. She was a fortunate enough filly to like to slop and would run on turf, which you find to be a very good thing, because you enter in a turf race and you pray for rain. And if it rains, you know, it becomes a 6-horse field instead of a 12-horse field. And if your horse likes to slop, you're golden, you know, and she was that. And that was nice. And I had a lot of fun on her. She's one of my favorite fillies to ride. Very good speed horse, tactical speed. You know, and again, she would run on any surface, including slop. So we had a lot of fun with her because of that.
How about Cappuccino?
Cappuccino, I just got to ride that one time in the fall championship. Hollendorfer sent him out from out west. Very nice horse. Very nice horse. One of the best horses I've ever ridden. Super nice stride. Very big stride. Very easy to ride. A lot of class. The classy ones, you know, they're easy to ride. You just kind of be a good passenger and stay out of their way and let them do what they do. And that's the best thing you can do for them. They take care of the rest.
Cappuccino, of course, won the Grade 3 Turfway Park Fall Championship Stakes in 2004. And so how long did you spend riding out east?
I spent the first 5 years of my career out east. I spent 2 years in Maryland and 3 years in Jersey. I loved the Jersey Circus, the Meadowlands, and, you know, Monmouth, and Garden State was actually running there. I rode at Garden State before they shut that down, and I got to ship into New York and ride a bit in New York, and that's always fun. And but I tell you, when I came to Kentucky, I knew right away that I would never leave.
Really?
Yes. I don't know why. I just, you know, it's such a, to me, Lexington is when God created racehorses, you know, he created Lexington for them to be in. This is what horse racing is about as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, I love the horse farms as far as you can see here. And, you know, that's so great. You know, I mean, when you're young, you know, I liked the city life. I liked New York. I think New York's a great place to visit. I wouldn't want to live there, but it's a great place to visit. But when I came out to Kentucky, you know, I knew right away, you know, the people here are so nice. It's a very different lifestyle. Everything slows way down, just the pace of the day slows down. And one of my biggest pet peeves is sitting in traffic, and you do a whole lot of sitting in traffic on the East Coast, and I can't stand that. And when I got out here and I could get on the highway and find out I can just drive to another racetrack and you just go, I was like, this is great, you know. And I don't mind traveling at all anymore, you know. You know, so I just love it here, you know, the people, the atmosphere. Churchill Downs, you know, is, you know, Churchill Downs, you know. And I got to spend some time riding in you know, being based at Churchill when I first came out here, and that was you know, exciting. And the Lexington area to me is, I guess everybody is different, but, you know, this is where I want to spend my life, and this is the kind of atmosphere I wanted to raise my kids in and grow up in. And it just doesn't get any better than this for me. I mean, everybody's got a personal choice, but for me, this is it.
How long have you been here in Kentucky then?
I came to Kentucky in 92 was my first year I spent here. Pat Day won the Derby on Little E.T., which was a big thing. You know, Pat waited a long time for that, and outstanding rider. You know, I was glad I got to ride a little time with him and see how he rode. And, you know, without a doubt, Pat is probably as patient of the riders I've ever seen in my life. You know, he was, talk about when you waited, and you think when it's time to go, wait some more. You know, Pat was a cool, cool customer.
Definitely. And what did you find was different from riding on the East Coast than traveling here to the Midwest, Kentucky, Ohio? Is there anything different?
Yeah, I found the racing to be different. I found it to be much kinder, I guess is the proper word. Racing on the East Coast, and I don't know if it's just because you're shipping all the time and riding with so many different riders, and, you know, you're in Jersey and you're going to Keystone or, you know, Parks. Well, it was Philadelphia Park now it's Parks, but you're shipping over there all the time to ride, and guys are shipping in the Garden State to ride, and it's not just your normal group of 30 to 40 guys that you're riding with, but there's so many different riders coming in and out and every day, and I think that really does affect how the racing is. But I found it out here to be just a little bit nicer, I guess. Everybody helped each other out a little more. Wasn't so quite as, you know, cutthroat, every man for themselves. That's what I found to be a good thing here. You know, because in my opinion, you can ride aggressively and ride to win and still take care of the guy next to you.
Now tell me, last year you won your 2000th victory. And tell us what you felt that day. That was at Belterra Park, and that had to be an incredible feeling.
Yes, it was. You know, when you're young, you're just riding. You don't think about numbers, or at least I didn't. I never thought about how many races I wanted to win in my career, or how many and you just kind of go along. And but what I've learned over the years, you see so many guys come and go. For whatever reason, injuries, struggling to the point they just can't handle the struggle anymore. And we all go through that at different times in our career. And that's very tough. But, you know, when you start to win that many races, you realize that you've made a career and a life out of something, not just, you know, you tried something and it didn't work out and, you know, you've moved to the next thing. And, you know, so it's very rewarding in that way, to know that, you know, I've been able to make a living for myself I've been able to, you know, raise children and provide for them, and do something that I love to do, and got, you know, and there was tough times and I got through them, and you know, I'm glad I did, and I'm very so thankful, and I feel so blessed that I was able to do something with my life that I really love to do, you know, because if you're gonna make it in this business, whether it be a jockey or a horse trainer or anything, I think you really have to love it, because it's going to get you through the tough times, and everybody has to go through those tough times at different points in their career. And it's what gets you through, you know, because you love it. And it, you know, it's not easy getting up at 4:30 every morning, but you know, when I really think about it, you know, I might have a job where I got to sleep till 8 o'clock every day and have weekends off, and but I know in my heart I wouldn't be happy. It's just not, you know, weekends off sounds great, you know, 2 weeks off every day, you know, weekends off, and you know, but it's not really for me. You know, I'm in it. You know, I love the horses, and I've always loved riding, and it's come very easy for me. I felt very natural on a horse. I'm much more comfortable around horses than I am people, especially at a young age. I was very, very shy kid, extremely shy.
Really?
Oh my God. You know, like just couldn't talk to anybody. And my agents are like, you got to talk, got to say something, got to get out of the car. You know, first went to Maryland. I wouldn't get out of the car when I went to Maryland because I lived in Florida for 10 years and it was 30 degrees outside and I didn't even know you had to wear a jacket ever, you know, so that was tough. I didn't want to get out of the car when I went to Maryland to ride, and he's like, you got to get out of the car. And I was like, really? You know, but yeah, I was extremely shy, and you learn, you know, you learn to do what you have to do to help your business, and you grow up and you do things better, but it didn't come natural. It wasn't very natural to me. I just liked being around the horses, you know, and being on their backs and in the barn and everything about them, really. I just was that kind of a person. I was more at home with the animal than I was the person.
Jockey Dean Sarvis joining us tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Dean, you mentioned your kids, and one of your children's here now actually listening to the show. So tell us about your family.
My oldest son, Devin, graduated last year and joined the Air Force. I'm super proud of him. Did not know he was going to do it. It was like a complete surprise for all of us, I think, including himself. You know, he started looking at schools and trying to figure out. He knew what he wanted to do. He was very much into computers and that kind of thing. And he wanted to go to some kind of a school for computer hacking and really like heavy duty computer stuff. And there's actually schools that are offering that now because companies are hiring people to do their security systems and test their security systems and things like that. And he was really into that. And he started looking at schools. And what he found out is that the Air Force offered a very good program like that. And he went in and talked to somebody. And he came back and he said, they're going to test me. And he went in and got tested. And he came back and he said, they want me to come back in 2 weeks. And he went back in 2 weeks. And they said, come back in 2 more weeks. And he went back in another 2 weeks. And he came home and said, the guy said, we'll teach you anything you want to learn. He said, you can pick whatever you want to do. Real smart kid. And, you know, and it was off. I mean, it was like that. And he's went to Lachlan Air Force Base in Texas, excuse me, for boot camp. And then he was in Goodfellas. He's still in Goodfellas, Texas, getting ready to go to, I believe, Virginia is where they're going to send him next. And I think he's pretty much already decided he's going to be career Air Force. Loves it. And I'm so thankful that he found something he loves, because, you know, he wasn't really sure what he wanted to do in high school. And then all of a sudden it just kind of hit him, you know, what I'm going to do. My son Jaden is here with me today, just graduated this spring. He's still deciding what he wants to do. I feel very fortunate that I knew at such a young age, because kids just don't know what they want to do with their lives. And And then I have a son, 6 years old, who he's got plenty of time to decide what he wants to do.
That's great.
His name is Josh.
Great family there. Dean said, you're talking about your kids and what they want to do. We only have a couple minutes left here on the show. But tell us, you've been riding for many years now, and do you have any kind of day as far as how long you decide to ride for and what you will do after you retire?
Right now, the plan is do it as long as I can. You know, I feel great. I'm in the best shape of my life. I think as you get older, you learn how to diet and make the most of your body and treat your body right and get the most out of it. And because I want to do this for as long as I can, I really pay attention to that. I work out all the time. I changed my diet about 10, 15 years ago, but I'm closer to 15 years ago, maybe actually even longer than that. Well, time flies, but, what you put in your body is extremely important. And, I just kind of grew up and learned that's the most important thing to me. And so I want to do this forever as long as I can anyway. So I'm going to take care of my body right and do it as long as I can and stay healthy and work out. And I feel great. So I'm going to do it as long as I can, you know, and when it's time to stop, I'll know. But right now I feel like it's just forward.
I love it. Any plans? Do you want to be an agent, trainer, anything like that?
You
don't even know yet.
I don't even know. You know, I can't imagine doing anything that's not horse related in the business. I'm sure it will be something like that. I just don't know at this point. I'm really focused on what I'm doing now as a rider. And I feel like I've got a lot of wins in me and a lot of, I feel like I'm just the best rider I've ever been right now. So, you know, I just want to win races and keep doing as good as I can for as long as I can. And when it's time to stop, I'll know.
Dean, we're all out of time. Unfortunately, that hour flew by.
Yes, it did.
Thank you so much for joining us and wishing you all the best.
Thank you very much, Christina.
Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website at horseracingradio.net. While you're there, check out all of the other great shows you can find on the Horse Racing Radio Network, like Trainer Talk, Equine Forum, and of course, Express Bent Radio. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Leeds Elapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.